Hello, everyone. This is episode 49 of the Justin Files podcast, a member of the Broken Jars Network. And again, we've got a sponsorship with Zencastr, and you can get free stuff too if you use Broken Jars as a code. I hope I have that right because I don't want to be giving people wrong information, but that's what Jacob told me. So, whatever. And I don't think we have any news today, and we kind of got a very loose episode lined up. We're just doing the specific character discussions again, and we're going to start with Murphy. Has been there since the beginning, and I think she's pretty awesome, even though once in a while I come across an opinion on the subreddits that someone just really dislikes Murphy. And at that point, like, if you dislike her so much, you probably shouldn't read the series anymore because she's just there all the time, which I think is great. But
I mean, I think a lot of the stuff I see where people are like, I don't like Murphy, is often people who might just be starting and are reading the first two or three books because I didn't like Murphy.
Right.
It was like being very nice to Harry, and we were like experiencing the world from his point of view. So, like, she wasn't a very likable character.
Right. But that growth is also something that I really appreciate about her, is that she went from not understanding and not giving him a chance to actually trusting him and giving him lots of chances. And
really, though, it's growth on both of their parts. And that's how, I mean, they establish trust because, you know, Harry was always like, what the shit, man? We've been working together all this time and now you're going to have a problem. But definitely by, you know, like book three, four, that sort of thing, he starts pulling her in out of necessity. And, you know, you start to see them work together. And I guess four is really where it starts to turn around. So he starts like, look, I do really need to start trusting you. And then she lightens up.
Yeah,
and definitely like she doesn't give him the benefit of the doubt because he's not telling her stuff. But I understand we get it from Harry's point of view. It's like I can't tell her if it's dangerous, and also the White Council might not like it.
But like, once then he there starts, was like, so it's kind of dangerous to tell her, but it's also dangerous to not tell her, and she goes into a situation blind, which happened enough times that you got to keep someone like that informed.
In general, not just with Murphy, but with some of the other less powerful supernaturals or even like people who are not supernatural, whatever. Like he has that discussion a lot. I feel like he does it with Billy too, mm-hmm. where he's like where they're like, no more holding back. We want everything or fuck you, Harry, kind of.
Yeah. And as soon as he starts telling her things and she can actually know the situation and know that he's not holding things back, then they can start working together as well partners. Much more on the same level, even though she can't throw fireballs, she's still very capable. And like the more involved she is,
she's like up there with McCrowan as one of the most, like, from what we see, the most capable mortals. Like, they can hold their own against the most powerful supernatural beings.
Mm-hmm.
She did all right with the Luke Guru. I was actually just connecting the dots, so this might be obvious to other people, but it just occurred to me that probably the galvanizing moment, it doesn't hurt that Murphy got targeted by the nightmare, but I think it was actually Susan, because he didn't tell Susan, and then she got into her trouble, right? And so, because you mm-hmm. see that change in book four with both Murphy and the werewolves, both groups, basically, where he starts telling them things and brings them along with him into the Never Never, to the Stone Table. So yeah, like it was an example where not knowing is probably worse than knowing. And that's where he starts to turn over his leaf and kind of grow a little bit.
Yeah. And he still was always like, no, you have to be volunteering. I'm not like conscripting anyone, but when everyone is wanting to help and they're going into a dangerous situation to help you, please tell them all the information they need in order to stay safe. And I don't know. Yeah, and I think Susan was the biggest changing point in that because she didn't understand the risks enough. And she went into one dangerous situation, but Murphy goes into them all the time.
Right. I mean, Murphy, with her cop mentality, though, I mean, think about it. The rules that apply to criminals with cops is pretty similar to fairies and everybody else. Don't take gifts. Don't drink the water. Keep your back to a wall, you know, stuff like that. Carry a big stick, you know. So Murphy's probably used to that a little bit. But yeah, definitely the whole like, because I was just thinking like what Dresden tells the alphas. It's like stay in the wolf form the whole time if you can and don't take gifts from nobody when they went to the stone table. Because it's like you don't want to have a debt to these people. Trust me, because mm-hmm. I do, you know.
Yeah. And as she gets more capable, she sees more things and like the she realizes the limitations of her own police force that she's a part of, that like they can't be the ones to solve everything because they're just going to get squished. And so it's going to have to be vigilante work, which she also has conflict with. And I really like the conflict in her about that, like what's mm-hmm. right in the law that she wants it to be versus what the actual reality is, that she can't stick always to the law.
And right. It's like you see that a lot with like cops in general in pop culture, or at least the good cops, where they're like, I want to do things by the book and the law, but there are difference between what is like good by the law and what is just the good, what is the best option.
Yeah, I mean, you see that more and more because it's a cheap and easy way to get some conflict out of those characters, right? Because you're going to see it a lot out of like the superhero shows as well. P.S. if you watch Defenders, stuff like that comes up. But what I like about it with Murphy, spoilers, by the way, but it drives her out of her job. She finally makes the wrong decision, at least from the establishment side, their point of view, that it eventually she gets put on review multiple times. She gets kicked out of being the department lead for SI and then eventually drummed out of the force entirely because she ends up going with Harry to Arctis Tor and is just gone for 24 hours during an active investigation.
Demoted, though, right? Like, what is it that happens when she's like straight up fired?
Maybe it was Chichen Itza then.
It was Chichen Itza that got her fired.
Right.
But how did they get her fired?
Because, again, she was just gone for,
I think it was Rudolph.
Yeah.
Rudolph did have your badge or something.
Yeah, when they're with the FBI building and then they're getting attacked. And then, by the way, she disappears in the middle of an investigation. It's just like suspicious enough that Rudolph, who also hates her, is able to just get her out. But I like the fact that there are consequences, negative consequences to her for doing the right thing. And mm-hmm. she accepts those consequences. It's not only she's not willing to get injured in a fight, she's also willing to take the injuries afterwards for having done the right thing.
Right.
And
it's a good point, because now that I'm thinking about her in this lens, like I see her every bit kind of the anti-hero in a way as Dresden is. And they're coming at it from two sides of the same coin in a way, though, right? Because she definitely wants to do good, and then at times she has to make the wrong decision. And then Harry more often makes the wrong decision, but he wants to do good, because I'm thinking like Cassius, for example, in a baseball bat. Mm-hmm. But Murphy, for example, she literally is a sword bearer for once or twice, and then she does the wrong thing for the right reasons, and then it gets broken.
And I mean, because it all worked out, and maybe it was like, of course she's going to make this decision. So it feels like maybe that's trying to take away some of the guilt on her part, but like she was really stuck between two impossible things. Either she lets this horrifically dangerous person go and knows that they're going to do something terrible, or she with judgment tries to kill him. And it was the judgment that because she lets him go. Aware
I think, of it. I think she would have let him go. It's that he will have Harry killed.
But, I mean, in that situation, both of them were, like, willing to die because it's a fight. But it's the fact that it was the judgment that was the part. Like, partly she couldn't let the person that she loves, get killed. But then...
Right. So you're telling me that the bearer of the Sword of Love made a bad decision on behalf of
No,
love.
That was faith. That was the sword of faith.
You're right. No, I was thinking of Miraculous, but she had... Fidlockius, so good call. But it's definitely a powerful thing, and I don't know, there's a lot to think about there, because on the one hand, like, I don't blame her at all, and if you think about what Michael has said before about the sword bearers don't tend to last very long, their average lifespan was like a day, wasn't it, or like 3 days, like they take it up for one job and move on. Mm-hmm. Whereas like Sonya and Shiro and Michael are actually the outliers in a way, and they were all active at the same time. So, her rise and fall is probably pretty typical, except for the sword got broke in the process.
It's actually funny to me then that if that's what's been the norm through the centuries, that it's like the sword will appear when it's needed in the hand of someone maybe once, and then
or
it will
stone.
Appear again when it's needed,
right.
when and then go away again. Then all the people, because there are several people who are like, who brings up that Harry is holding the swords away from the world, and it's right. like, Well, if that was kind of the norm before, and having three knights at the same time is very unusual and something recent. And why are you surprised that not everyone has a sword right now?
Because he's a person and he's stopping them. Like, it's one thing if it passes out of like history, right? Like,
probably there was always some person who held that it wasn't just lying around.
Sure, but they didn't always know. And that's the difference. Like, because if you're thinking the warrior, for example, where one of the priests shows up to do something about that, I mean, you've got multiple things going on there. One, you know, thou shalt not suffer a witch to live. So they're like, look, it's not only is it in the hands of a person, it's in the hands of the enemy for all they know. And he had two of them, which is also literally never happened as far as we know. So kind of a big deal. Just to talk about why somebody might try to stop Harry. Like, I understand the guy's point of view, but again, wrong decisions maybe for the right reasons, but kidnapping the kids was definitely a shame too far.
But certainly he had good intentions.
Sure. That's what I mean.
Mm-hmm. And I like the way that Murphy handled the swords and the fact that she was aware that it has a purpose. It's not able to just come out whenever she wants it because of its power. It had to deal with faith and for the right reasons.
Right.
And so she tried to protect it as much as she could. And I love the hiding it in the bazooka.
Personally. Oh, yeah. Such a great moment where it's like, this is an unbelievably devastating, powerful weapon, hiding a sword. Which is an even more devastating and unbelievably powerful weapon. Yeah, so
like having a grenade with an atom bomb inside.
Right. Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah, skin game just great across the board. You know, there's lots of shenanigans. Like, even Harry doesn't realize until she breaks it out, right? Because it's like, and then he levels the rocket launcher at Nicodemus and pulls out the sword, and it's like, oh shit, twice. You know, so.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite books for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that one particular scene of the fact that she actually won the fight against Nicodemus. She's almost 45 foot nothing little woman, and he's right. 2,000 years old, average size of a man. He's had 2,000 years to practice. She's had less than 40, and she won.
Ish.
And then also got irrevocably or permanently injured, but she won.
Likely. Yeah. That's one of the things where it's like, you know, maybe yes, maybe no, you know. So
yeah,
she might have gotten taken out like Michael, and which means that there's probably shenanigans in the future. Like, you know, go Team Valkyrie. That's my vote. But
yeah,
you know, that I'm still hoping for that to pay off, because for those of you who want the full explanation, you know, we've got Blood Rites, right, where they go after the vampire den. And Harry sees her with his sight for the first time. So,
No, he saw her with the sight the first time in book 3, Grave Peril, when he was using it to unwrap it on Mickey Malone, and she comes charging in.
Okay.
So it was the second time.
Yeah. So was Blood Rites when she was tarnished then, or is that still later? Because there was another moment where he saw her and she was still the angelic form, but she looked like all bloodied.
That's the one with the where she gets like mind fucked.
That's Grave Peril.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's the one where with the dead sorcerer who like comes back.
Right. So that's Grave Peril. But I know there was one time where he sees her all but like perfect as an angel, and then later
she comes rushing in as Harry is trying to help that cop, the older one is retired, and she comes rushing in, and he still has his sight on, and she's like looks like an angel, and her sword is the gun and everything. That's like that scene where she's not been tarnished yet.
Right. And later, and so in the same book, when she is tarnished, it probably was in Blood Rites. I don't remember the specific passage, but I mean, that is when he sees her next. I don't think he sees her after that. And at that point, she's accepting the fact that she has to be a vigilante instead of just the law-abiding cop. So that probably did tarnish her a little bit.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I think, at least. But and I still do the Valkyrie thing, because I like Valkyries and I like Murphy, so why not combine the two?
Blood Rites was where she was bleeding from several wounds. Where he sees it. So, yeah. Okay. But you're right. Because, I mean, he would have seen her a couple of times in grave peril, because I thought he used the sight to actually like see the nightmare when he was in the office, but maybe not.
No, I don't think so. I think he just realized that she was trapped and he tried to put her to sleep.
Gotcha. Right. Cool. So, I mean, that's a great tease though for her, you know, for her future shenanigans anyway, which you see some of that, maybe it's just the only illusion is that it's an allusion to her being a sword bearer in the first place, that maybe he can see that on people by using his sight. But I'm on team Valkyrie where like later on she's going to get tragically dead and then come back. So, because she's going to die. Another... Like,
no, that's not completely confirmed yet. But I do like the idea that this Catholic Irish person is going to be a Norse Valkyrie. Just because, right. I mean, she makes it the point that like, of course, not everything in church is great, but she's still Catholic. And that would just be kind of a weird moral qualm for her, which is maybe, fun.
You know, like, yeah, in the sense that everything's connected, maybe it's not as hard to rationalize from that perspective. But I feel like, didn't she meet Gard at some point? I mean, yes. Gard is definitely hat tipped to her by about being a warrior woman as well, which I think is one of the main points to that theory. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the circumstances though.
It was in Aftermath when she had to track down Marcone as to what's happening with Georgia and things like that, because Georgia had been kidnapped. And she runs into Gard, and Gard is really impressed with her. And so at the end she says, "Hail warrior, and don't be surprised if you get a job offer from my boss."
Ah, okay. So that's pretty freaking explicit then. So.
Yeah. And it's the kind of job that she would like, you know, protecting people, preparing for what is coming.
Protecting people, hunting things, right. The family business.
Fighting. Yeah.
Did anyone else get that reference?
Right. And I was going to say she'd been training with the Einar Jarl anyway. So maybe that's all the reference really is that she'd come back as one of those undead warriors, you know, like they're revenant or something of the kind where it's like they fell in battle, but they're still hired out as shock troops. I'm not 100% the lore on that, but
I mean, that could be, but we haven't seen a female Einar Jarl yet. So maybe they're like sexist that way.
Right. Valkyries are females only because, you know.
Well, they are, but
everything Butcher does is sexist. So, yeah. Well, and I mean, all of them, how would you tell, right? They're all 6 foot tall, like 12 foot long hair and, you know,
beards.
Blonde.
You might be able to tell by beards. I don't think Gard
has. I don't know, man. So, Andreas, you can answer this, right? Do Norse women have beards? Is that how manly they are? So, are they like dwarves?
They are not dwarf women, no. They do not have beards, mostly.
Mostly? Okay. But there are some. So they might have been there. So.
But will Murphy have a beard?
Good point.
Since she is Catholic, you know, that guy, when you cut his hair, he lost his strength. Maybe if you cut her beard, she'll lose her strength.
But she doesn't have a beard in the first place.
How about she'll get it? I don't know.
But she speaks Martian, so maybe she's like two-thirds of the way there. She'll die and grow a beard, and then, you know, that'll
and
make
then Harry
everything
will be all confused.
Right.
But, I don't know, I like the jokes, essentially. Not really jokes, but like Murphy's Catholic, going up against talking to essentially gods or dealing with those things. Also divorced twice. I love that her description of having to go to see her family of like two divorces, count them two divorces.
Right.
Catholic Irish people.
Right.
I really like that family thing. I could have another scene of that.
It's so fucked up, man.
I want to see a family reunion again with those. With Harry. Yeah.
Well, because you've got, you know, one of her exes married her little sister, right? So yeah, now her little sister is married and Murphy isn't, but it's even worse because married to an ex. And it's like, holy crap, like, how did you ever think that was a good idea?
You know? Like, the way Harry put it is like, I like you, but you're too old and also too successful.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, it's just, but now, because her ex, Rick, or is it Dick, Rick, whatever, either way.
Rick, but Harry calls him Dick.
Yeah, he's in the FBI. He obviously knows that Harry was dead, even though maybe not all of the rest of them do. And
The White Council took care of that paperwork.
Yeah. Well, I hope we see him. I hope we see him and Tully in, because it's Tully, right? That's Tilly. Tilly. Okay, that's what I was worried about. But anyway, so him and Tilly in Peace Talks. Like,
we'll definitely see Tilly again. I don't know if he'll be in Peace Talks. And Tilly's a cool character.
Great.
Well, I don't know. I have this idea in my head that, okay, so Harry and Murphy are going to get married, and both of them are freaking out because obvious problems on their side. And Mama Murphy is there, and she's all happy and handing out hamburgers and cakes. And then Murphy has a couple more nibblings, and Dick, the FBI ex, is like, weren't you dead? It's just...
Me? No, no, greatly exaggerated.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly the line I was thinking. I'm like, Harry's got a plithy one-liner for that, and you know it. But yeah, that's going to be an interesting wedding because, so where's the section for the she? Where are they sitting? Because, you know, Leah and maybe Mab, you know, like.
And sure, Molly. Right? Point, Michael and Charity are going to find out about Molly's new job.
See, yeah, you know that's not going to happen.
More than just a job. Like, it's like, she's a different race now.
Right.
I don't know. That's confusing.
There's just no way, because that would be a book unto itself. Like, that would be the 21st case file. So,
well, my only comfort is that Jim promised us that he will show us Michael and Charity finding out that Molly is the Winter Lady. He promised it at some point.
The next book.
But
everything's happening in Peace Talks. That's why it hasn't come out yet.
So. It's a fucking big book.
Right, because he's like, oh shit, you know, like when you shuffle the cards and you don't quite make it, and then you're doing 52 card pickup. So, except he painted himself into a corner and then played that game. Like, there's so many things where it's like, how the hell, man? Like, I know he's gonna figure it out, and I know something's gonna get bumped, but that's why, like, everything happens in Peace Talks. Put that in a hashtag, you know, because it's like, Ebenezer's gonna find out about Thomas. The Carpenters are gonna find out about Molly. Then they're going to find out that Justine's pregnant. Then they're going to find out that Harry's banging Murphy. Then they're going to find out, like, Jesus, man.
Peace Talks is essentially family drama, and I'm going to enjoy it.
Which is hilarious because it's supposed to be like the 9/11 of the magical world, right? Like, this big thing's going to happen and they're going to get outed. But that's not even the thing we're most curious about. Like, it's going to be fun, but we're like, oh my God, look at all the family drama. Days of Our Lives, Dresden Files. Like, so,
speaking of Harry banging Murphy, I kind of, it's me. I hope that whole, like, we don't need to have that sex scene described in the books. That happened between the books. They do it often. It's fine. I don't need to have it described because that's just, it's Harry and Murphy. It's just weird.
Really? I know them too well. The scene where he dreamed about her didn't do anything for you?
No, I was like, oh, can I skip this? Like, this is no, I don't want to hear this.
That was right up there with the Susan scene from Deathmass for me, man. So that's some good stuff.
That scene was pretty good, actually.
I mean, there wasn't really blondes or something. Because I like Lucio so much.
I hate Susan. Like, I just want to point that out. I hate that bitch. But like, Lucio was just like, come on, how can you not like Lucio?
Yeah. I mean, she's a great person. Pill. She's not right for Harry, but she's a great person.
She can temper his wildness with her steely resolve.
Did you read the books? That was not Lucio and Dresden's relationship at all. So she was the one pushing him to be more adventurous and more than just, you know, in the D&D sense. So
I was just trying to find arguments. Like, you don't have to then count them with logic and what actually happened in the books.
Right. I'm for your benefit. I doubt he's going to put it in, you know, like another book. It's otherwise it's going to turn into something like what's the other
Anita series? Blake?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I doubt it. I mean, there are plenty of urban fantasy books where there is a sex scene once in a while. And I'm like, okay, whatever. But like Anita Blake sometimes there's story and then there's sex scenes.
But he's Harry sex scenes in 15, 16 books.
Right, exactly. Well, and like, there's only two big ones. And like, it's implied with Lucio about every time she shows up.
I mean, there's the implications with Lucio, but I'm sorry. So there's Susan, and then there's Mab, and then there's the dream.
Oh, yeah, I guess Mab for sure. So,
but you can count that as six.
But I'm thinking, yeah, like, if you really want to get technical, though, there's literally nothing for three books, you know? So between Mab and, you know, the dream of Murphy, there was nothing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Like, no side stories, no just anything. And all the stuff with Lucio is half in side jobs anyway, so.
It just kind of happens on the side. We don't really, I know he says to someone that they occasionally have great monkey sex, or he thinks it or something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I don't, well,
and they've joked, like he's joked with that with Murphy anyway, because like, I think that was Changes, right? Where he's like, well, at one point he talks about it being loud and the neighbors will call the police. Like,
yes. He says at the end of Cold Days that the sex will be frequent and vigorous and there will be screaming. The neighbors will call. And eventually she says, maybe you'll be the one screaming.
Right. Okay. So it's Cold Days.
Yeah.
Okay. Cause that's the motorcycle get on bitch, you know? So
yeah. Where she's like, I'm not sure. I like that you got all turned on during all that danger. And he was like, I did?
Yeah, a woman notices an erection pointed into her back.
Right, yeah.
Maybe I just had a gun and wasn't happy to see you at all.
People are oblivious, but I think even I would notice that, you know? So if she got an erection while she was riding bitch saddle on the bike, like, yeah. Anyway.
Bitch saddle, that's sexist.
Well, it's just, they call it that, like flipping a bitch, you know, when you make a U-turn. So I didn't come up with the words. All right. So.
But are you sexist for using them?
Probably. So.
Ellie could probably say so.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like Murphy. I enjoy her. I love the way that she's been building up, realizing her limitations, but also realizing how far she can go. Like, just for example, in Small Favor, when Tiny Gruff shows up and he wants to throw down with Harry, and she puts down her gun and her badge and says, fuck no.
Right. Is that an official position? Yes. You know, where she basically uses her, P.S., I'm a cop and mortal authorities, and you don't get to throw down here, so...
Yeah, and she just, like, she had enough experience that she's able to, like, wind it through. And it's like, no, you don't get to do that without consequences because I am furious at you.
Right.
And it just, it's not always the fighting, which is the great part. Like, we're so excited for Family Drama Days of Our Lives Peace Talks.
Right, right. Well, yeah, so, and because she does that with Tiny, right? So, like, paint that picture fully. She's 5'2", like 110 pounds soaking wet in body armor. And this dude's like 8-9 feet tall, if not taller. Like he has to duck and like walk on his knees to get into Max Barr. And she like stares him down. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why is that one not on like DeviantArt? Come on, internet artists.
No.
Get on that. But so but all of this aside, as excited as I am that they're going to have even 5 minutes together, because that's probably the reality, I'm pretty excited to read about Hawaii as well. So her stint with Kincaid, and they go on a trip, and that's going to be in Briefcases. So I'm super excited for
Finally.
That. I know, right?
Oh my God.
So, cause
yeah. And whatever happened with her wrist and like, yeah, it was interesting.
And the P90, like, because it's engraved, will always have Hawaii, isn't it? Or was it a note that he sent with the gun? But I thought that instead of flowers, get Murphy a gun.
Oh, yeah, definitely get her a gun. She'll enjoy that more. But, I kind of forgot, like, whether it's engraved on it or not. It's definitely attached to it, and I enjoyed Harry being upset the fact that Kincaid was getting her attention, and he wasn't willing to admit that he wanted Murphy's attention, and stupid high school romance shit.
Right. Yeah. I mean, of all the times that Harry has been criticized as being like, you know, the sexually repressed, blah, 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 whatever, because we were talking about that before the show, he definitely shows his immaturity for that sort of thing where, you know, it's like Murphy and I will never work out together. And it's not a me thing or a her thing. It's an us thing. And then Kincaid steps in and he's like, you son of a bitch.
So. I claimed my territory here, right. Even though it will never happen. Or at least I think so right now.
Yeah.
Like don't like it's like the like okay, I don't want to play with this toy anymore or whatever, and then someone picks it up. It's like, hey, give me my toy.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, which also not great reflection of character there, but human, you know.
It good is very or human bad, because so. Humans are irrational, and everyone was recognizing that they really like each other. But like what happened in Proven Guilty, there's at that time, at least, things that didn't match up. And so they kept coming back to it like from blood rites to proven guilty into later, is that like they really do care for each other and they match perfectly. So Lucio and Harry is never going to happen again, but Harry and Murphy are going to get married. Okay.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
third time's the charm, right?
Right. Right. No, I think it's pretty heavily implied, spoilers, you know, again, but I think it's pretty heavily implied, at least in my mind, for day one, that he says, we're taking the kid to the zoo. So that implies, you know, to me at least, that it's him and Murphy. So
yeah,
it's possible.
Family, parents, child.
Right. It's possible he was taking friends or Mouse was going or whatever, because Mouse is almost certainly going to be there. But
no, Mouse is going to be there. We got it confirmed. We're getting pieces out of his point of view, which confuses the hell out of me. But you just reminded me, is that in Proven Guilty, she says that she wants kids. And Harry says he can't afford to have any kids. And then he has one, didn't know about it. And now she doesn't have any kids and she's 40.
Well,
it's going to happen.
Maybe they'll have another kid.
Right.
But then it's also, then she's pregnant and debilitated for like a year.
I don't want to think about it because my mind started going to dark places. Let's just be happy with what we got. So I'm sure they're going to try, but I don't want to think about the ways that Butcher can use that against us. So
and then a baby boy was born and she died in childbirth. See ya.
Right. Yeah. Or 100 other bad things. So
yeah, they'll try vigorously and loudly and the police will call and they'll be screaming and then Jim will definitely use it to
know what you're
hurt us more.
Well, think about it though. It's not like he hasn't attacked a pregnant woman in the book series before, Charity. So
yeah.
Jim just likes to hurt us.
He does. And if we didn't like it, we wouldn't read the series, right?
Right.
So
I don't know. I read it for the great Mouse and Harry moments.
Well, I was just thinking too, because we're gonna have stuff from his perspective. Does that mean that Maggie Jr. can talk to him, and she'd almost have to, right, on some level? So,
Or she just recognizes that he's a special dog,
right? I'm excited the possibilities, because then that means she's gonna know more shit about the universe than Harry is, just by virtue of talking to Mouse, right? Because that's why we can't ever have a Mouse perspective story.
But now we're going to get one. And I know, right? I'm confused and excited.
Everything about this is potentially awesome, because if it is Harry and Murphy and we're still getting a perspective from Maggie Jr. and Mouse, like, does that mean that they get taken out or that they're running around off screen and then something gets to them anyway? Like, there's a lot of possibilities.
I kind of hope we will get some more Harry Mouse, Mouse being Harry's sidekick again. He's like one of my favorite sidekicks, even though he doesn't say anything. But yeah. I kind of got the feeling that Mouse is just gonna be with Maggie now, and we won't really see him.
Maggie needs Mouse, but that doesn't mean that Maggie can't be with Harry, right?
I know that they will be living together, but I mean, will he take Mouse away from Maggie to go do supernatural stuff, or will he leave Mouse at home to protect her always?
Don't know. I think they should just always be together. Always, all three of them.
We'll probably figure that out with the whole, you know, because he's going to end up being her service dog, at least potentially. So either the school she's going to go to is going to be okay with that, or, you know, Harry's going to have it officially done or pretend or something. Because doesn't he already have like a service dog thing for Mouse?
Yeah, he
because
did.
People get disarmed. Didn't he use that in Proven Guilty or whatever?
Yeah, so, and well, Michael and Charity had it all figured out for Maggie.
That'd be like,
right.
He like has the dog to help him understand big words or something.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Yeah, it was at the end of White Knight. It was at the end of White Knight when they're in the hospital, endish, and he's a service dog. I have a disability. I can't read words when I'm talking or something like that.
Something, yeah. I think Andreas is right about the big words, though. Like, he helps me read
something
the big
about
words
big
or whatever.
Words.
Yeah. So.
As we have stopped talking about Murphy, perhaps we should move on to the next character, which Andreas is so excited about and also begins with an M.
Right. I was noticing our list, too. I'm like, there's all the M names again.
Yeah, Jim has got a problem with the letter M. But okay.
Maybe.
And also
money.
The name Margaret.
Yeah, he's got money on the brain, so M, money. and just more
Eminem.
Whenever he's writing the books, he's like a dot of science going through his eyes.
I mean, he does talk about how he has to write a book every time he needs to buy a house or, you know, pay his mortgage or send his kid to college or whatever. So,
oh boy, better write another book,
right?
Oh, the horror.
Yeah, that's why he had to write three so he could afford to build his own place in Colorado now.
How's that going for you?
If that ever gets finished.
I think it's done now. That's why we're finally getting it. But anyway, so.
Whatever. Let's talk about Mort. Mortimer. The
Mortimer.
Medium. Mortimer the medium. Jesus Christ.
Yep. At least it's not. Yeah. The word escapes me right now. Alliterative, right? So.
Mort has to be like one of the coolest character developments we've seen over the rest of the files.
It's certainly an interesting one.
He never really stops being kind of a coward, but he's like, it's just because he's fucking smart enough to know how dangerous everything is, and he's like, I'm not strong enough, even though it actually turns out he is very strong.
Yeah, I mean, he's a coward. That doesn't mean he's not preparing to protect himself.
Right? Well, he's good at what he does. He's exceptionally good at what he does, and you see that in Changes. You know, all the preparation he's got. He's got a ghost story, safe room, right? Basically. Yeah, sorry. You're right. So I'm just thinking around the events. But yeah, so in Ghost Story, like, he's got a room coated in ghost dust, right? Like, the paint has ghost dust in it so that they can't get into him. So he's got his little safe space and all that jazz. So I just thought it was interesting that, you know, like, it's no slouching matter to be able to talk to the spirits anyway, but the way that he uses it, I thought was pretty interesting as well.
Mm-hmm.
Other than just for game, because that's how we meet him, you know.
Well, one, I also think that Harry even says this, where it's like he hopes that Mort has a different way of making ghost dust than Harry's depleted uranium.
Yeah. And he probably does.
Making the paint or whatever.
Right.
And it's a smart idea to just put it in the paint that's all around a room and help protect you from all the ghosts that keep apparently funneling around his house all the time.
Right.
But, yeah, it also turns out that Mort has probably been protecting Chicago just as much as Harry has, just from like a different angle. Like, what he's been doing has been just as important to protect the people of Chicago as all the stuff Harry's done.
Yeah, I really enjoyed when we meet him in Ghost Story, because he's all freaked out about Harry being there, and he's all upset, and so he goes and gets one Oreo cookie and eats it as a way of calming himself. It's just like a little character quirk right there that I really enjoyed.
I kind of got impression of that's because he kind of used to be like kind of fat on a slop.
He was slimming down, and he described it. Okay, he's taking care of himself better, but Harry shows up, and I need one Oreo.
I need some sugar. I'll take one. One will do.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's all of those things, right? Like, because when you first meet him, he's the sniveling coward on his way out, because the line, you know, the threshold between the, you know, here and the never never is thinning, right? So ghosts are coming through, and he knows bad shit's coming, but his skills have kind of atrophied, and he's a coward, so he's on his way out. But he's this short, fat, sweaty, coward guy, right? And then 9 books later, he's gone at 180 degrees, except for still being mostly a coward. You know, he's thinned up. He started making better decisions. He started using his power again, because Dresden could sense the talent, right? But he's like, he doesn't use his magical abilities, so they started to wane. But he's like, you probably can get them back. And that clicks with Mort in such a way that freaking 9 books later, you know, he starts to turn it around, which I think is a huge deal too. I think mostly his contributions though were probably around, well, I mean, they'd certainly be between Deadbeat and Ghost Story anyway, because that's when Corpsetaker gets taken out.
Yeah, so when we first meet him in Grave Peril, and he's running away from the nightmare and the thinning of the boundary between the never-never and reality. And when Harry is reading his notes, they go from like really neat structured handwriting to crazy scrawls as he's going into alcoholism. And by deadbeat, when Harry goes back to him for help finding all the necromancers, he's, I think,
already gone back to the shape up there, right?
Mm-hmm. And he was like able to actually call the ghosts, speak to them, had his normal powers back. He still didn't want to help until he heard that it was Murphy that needed help. I was like, why didn't you just say so? Because of, he's a friend of Jack's, which is the same thing that Harry used in Ghost Story.
Right.
And then like at that point, he had probably recovered from the alcoholism, but he was still like in traction. So when you see him in Ghost Story, he's also given up trying to hide the fact that he's balding and just has a straight Charles Xavier that I remember Harry saying. Although I think that was a slight mistake that at one point, I think in Deadbeat, he had just shaved his head. And then in Ghost Story, it was a surprise to Harry again, but whatever.
Save that for the episode. The mistakes episode, inconsistencies. So
okay, yeah,
we'll look into
bring
it.
That back.
Right. No, yeah, and that's kind of interesting. I didn't remember the alcoholism, and I had forgotten the connection, right? Because Jack pretty much drops him off at Mortimer's house, or well, mm-hmm. not Jack directly, but crap.
No, it was what? Jack. It was
no,
Jack.
No, because it was the Murphy's old partner.
Yeah, no, Murphy's old partner. Carmichael took Harry to the police station. Okay. And never
leave, I'm pretty sure Jack doesn't leave the office. It's Carmichael who takes him to Ghost. To,
see, and that's what I thought. But
Jack goes into the thing, and then as they're driving away, it's like you can still decide not to until he gets out of the car.
Right.
And by the way, tell him that Jack sent you. It might help.
Well, and talk about a connection to Murphy since we were talking about her. Like, we still don't know what happened to Jack, right? Just... they say he ate a bullet, right? And that's why he's helping work. But it seems like there was a loophole, which is why he's in between, you know, instead of like went to hell because Catholic, you know. So,
yeah, I mean, it could be something like that. Like, because he was Catholic, maybe he's afraid to go beyond the door like Harry eventually was able to do. Because, I mean, whatever he was told is that he's going to go to hell. Really dark job of the... like black cat case files that they called them.
Right.
And like doing all of that weirdness that no one else could really understand and not none of that help. It could just be that he got depressed enough to kill himself. Or what if he had to kill himself in order to fight something that was dead?
Maybe. And I mean, the thing that I hadn't considered is like how he knew Mort and vice versa. Right. Like to call in that kind of favor implies like, he did something big, like maybe saved his life or they worked together for a long time. And maybe that's why Mort does drink is because he knows what actually happened, you know, or yeah.
when thinks he like knows. He, as he describes maybe, in Grave Peril.
The consultant for the Black Cats like Justin is.
Right. Like it's possible. So like that's something that comes to mind or just that, you know, maybe Jack was older enough that Mort like they're of a similar age. I think he's older than Murphy, right? But maybe Jack just saved him from something. Or like you said, no, I think I like the idea that maybe he was a consultant and that's why Mort got out of it is because it got too hot for him. And he knows how dangerous it is because he did it.
But know? I think that in Ghost Story, when they're talking about Mort knowing Jack Murphy, it's actually, well, I'm friend of his ghost. And maybe that's a qualifier is that he knows that Jack is no longer gone or no longer there and that it's just the ghost. Or maybe he never knew Jack when he was alive.
Right. And that's a thing we don't know enough about either of them, but I just, those two points seem to click all of a sudden. I'm like, wait a minute. Because we don't know why Mort's really drinking either. Like maybe he's drinking to suppress the spirits and get rid of his ability in a way anyway. Because we've seen that trope in plenty of other, you know, sci-fi and fantasy superhero things where it's like, I drink to forget, right? But,
I mean, and like he mentions in some of the series, is that he sees, like, the kids that have been murdered brutally and maybe not always know that they're dead. He can see all the people who are left behind, no matter how they died. And, like, what's her face with the axe and Grave Peril and the babies? Agatha Hagglethorne.
Yeah, right.
And so he's also dealing with all of those. And yeah, you might want a drink to help you go to sleep. And then you need it the next night and earlier. And it could just be building up from just normal ectomancery.
Sure, sure. And that's the thing too. Like he's the only one we know of, right? Other than the actual necromancers. So
yeah, like he's an ectomancer, like ectoplasm, versus a necromancer, which means raising the dead instead of talking to ghosts.
And I think part of the distinction would probably end up being like how you interact with them. Necromancy is about like dominating death, right? It's, you know, the power of life over death, or the power of death in general. Whereas like ectomancy, you know, okay, I can see and talk to ghosts. That's not the same as like trying to control them and summon them up and use their power.
Totally want to make some Defenders references right here, but wait a bit.
Yeah, you and I will have to talk after the show because I watched it too. So we're like two of the people that I know right now. So yeah, I had a free Saturday. Yeah, exactly. So,
he's fun to see his arc and like how he goes from like a broken person to being much more put together. And I just like the way that he snarked back at the corpse taker. It's whatever he said when he was like being drawn down into the pile of wraiths or something that were like eating him in some fashion. I don't know, but it's terrible.
Right.
I think he's like, go watch the sunlight or something. His way of snarking off at her.
Right. When he was being drawn into the well of Dementors. So.
Yes. Yeah, pretty much.
Right.
Do we have more to say about the side character?
Yeah, Andreas, I mean, he was the one you were excited to talk about, right? Did we cover...
Yeah, I mean, I think we've covered, like, a lot of it. I feel like he's like, a pretty realistic character. Like, some are more realistic than other Dresden Files. I feel like how they would respond to certain things. But he's like... And I also like the development where he goes from just being a coward who just don't want to do anything, and he, like, kind of, like, to a person who will step up and do the right thing.
Right.
In large parts, influenced by Harry coming and dragging him into danger, I think.
Yeah.
Right. And, and almost more so in my mind, the line that he leaves him with, you know, where it's like, look, you don't necessarily have to help out, but just so you know, you can get your powers back, you know, and just kind of sets him on that path in the first place. So, like, maybe Mort thought he was just so far gone that it was just going to keep going this way until he got caught in his lies or died. And then Harry's like, you know, for what it's worth, just thought you should know. So it's a pretty crazy, like, small moment in my mind that pays off in a huge way.
Oh, yeah. Also, I just remember.
I would actually love to see Mort some more in a, okay, not everything's going to hell. I need to consult Mort about dead people's way.
Hell like, spells!
In a way that he's, you know, when he hangs out with the wolves and stuff, like in a more social setting, include Mort in some of the right. hanging out stuff.
Yeah, he's totally the role player. Like,
I think he should be part of the Paranet.
Right.
He'll use a cell phone. He can drive like a nice hybrid vehicle. So, like, he should definitely be part of the Paranet and helping out there and getting the protection of it. But I don't. Also,
I think him and Binder could have some great quip.
Along with Mortimer, we can also talk about his Sir Stuart, his family ancestral ghost protector, who I thought was a great amount of fun. And I pictured like John Cleese.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I mean, my favorite moment with him was like he's there in the car and he turns out like a ghost pipe and he starts puffing on it. And there's like a line of ectoplasm left on the roof of the car. Okay.
Nice. Yeah, that's a detail I don't remember catching before. That's awesome.
Well, I actually like Ghost Story because it's a good book and you should read it more often.
Well, part of the problem is I'm stalled right there on my third read through. I realized today because I'm like, maybe I should start doing it again because, you know, we're going to get new material soon. But I need to still get the Marsters version because even reading it, I couldn't get the voice out of my head. So I'm probably going to have to knuckle down and actually go sign up for Audible and get it going. But.
Yeah, and it's worth it because it's a pretty good book, and I like.
I mean, some people certainly think so.
Is that a jab at me?
I mean, like I said before, I think all Dresden books are good, and Ghost Story is not the worst book. It's above Stormfront and Full Moon, at least.
Right.
Yeah, it's a good book. I liked. No, I'm not going to get into the ranking episodes. We do not have time for that one today. But I really enjoy the John Cleese character because that's what I think of him as. And like, oh, he recognized all three of the Swords of Faith right off the bat. It's like, how did you know that? It took me years to figure out that it was Esperachius, it was whatever, and everything like that.
Well, and that, yeah, that might be something, I don't know. I don't remember that part either, actually. I'll have to go look into it, but because I was looking up to find out what war he was from, because he's clearly a soldier, right? And so he was a Marine in the Revolutionary War. Yes. And so it's not even like there's, like, he was an American Marine, to clarify. So yes. in the Revolutionary War. And so it's like, how would he know that other than the fact that he's been around for 300 years? So maybe he's seen a thing or two or three or, you know.
He was just like so much fun. He said that he lost like 10 years listening to a Pink Floyd album.
Right. Which who hasn't really? Like,
do we think that he had magical powers? He was maybe an ectomancer? We haven't had some empirical evidence or like a suggestion. I don't know what you want to say.
It kind of does sound like magical ability goes in family lines. And if Sir Stewart was able to leave a ghost that was also significantly powerful the way that people seem to talk about him as, that they might be ectomancers. So it could be a connection.
Because I was just thinking like how, you know, Harry and Ebenezer has like similar magical aptitudes, not just that he inherited magic, but that they're both kind of magical brawlers. They have a lot of ammo in the tank, or what, however you want to say it.
But Margaret seemed to be a bit different. She didn't quite seem to be the brawler, since she seemed to be the fairy-ish kind.
We don't really know. We haven't really heard much about her powers beyond that. Well,
she was Margaret. She was really good at the Never Never.
Yeah, but we don't know. I mean, she could have been a brawler and still hung out with FaZe. I mean, I don't think that one excludes the other.
No, but it seemed like maybe she had a different type of magic.
Harry's the Winter Knight, and he's a brawler.
Yes, because the Winter Knight is a brawler.
Yeah, but that's fairy-related, too. You can say, oh, he hangs out with fairies, and he can't be a brawler.
And he has a fairy godmother, and he's a brawler.
But it's just like, we haven't really been said one way or the other. Although we know that magic can certainly run family lines. But if it's like, is it a certain, there are certain affinities for magic. Do they run family lines? Like ectomancy or Binder's ability to summon demons?
Yeah, we don't know quite enough about that. I mean, we don't have enough parent-child pairings in the series of magical abilities.
Plus, Charity's magical power is very mind-related as well.
Yeah, but she did stuff, but I don't think we ever got a specification as to what she did.
We don't really know how powerful or how much she had learned to become powerful. Other than we know the White Council found that coven, and they weren't like, you're powerful enough to be on a White Council.
Yeah.
But then she would have to be trained and shit anyway. I don't know what their philosophy. What is the White Council's philosophy when they found someone? They're adult. They haven't broken one of the laws of magic, and they have a high amount of magical aptitude.
They say Elaine join Mallory. Us, or we force you to.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of interesting because my first reaction was going to say, well, they don't, because kind of like the Jedi, they mostly get you as kids, except that, you know, Ramirez has given Mallory the test multiple times because he knows that she's Elaine. Throwing the test. Elaine Mallory, right? So,
yes. So, yeah. But to clarify, we were talking about Elaine.
Right. So, yeah, they probably do induct you as an adult, but you're probably also a pain in the ass. You know, they probably, you know, treat you like you're going to turn at any point because you've been running around rogue long enough anyway.
Or they treat you like a child who hasn't gone through elementary school yet and force you to become an apprentice again, which I would find very annoying.
Right. So yeah, there it seems like there is some kind of precedence there, but we don't know for sure.
Yeah. So we'll just have to wait for more books to find out, Andreas.
This is one of those things I think we should write down as an Ask Jim thing.
You won't come on again. Take note.
Yeah.
Write it down.
Well, I mean, I'll have the opportunity soon, so.
That is true.
Maybe to have it on the show.
Well, yeah, sure.
I don't think anyone's asked this before, and we need to have it like new material. Like, remember how much people were like, oh, but you had so many new questions.
Do you want to find out in like 1.5 to 2 years, or do you want to find out in like 1.5 to 2 months? Kabam!
Can you just tell me then and I'll tell anyone else?
I tell you what, I'll bring him to my house. We'll do a show while he's out here. No,
sure, ask him.
I promise no tape or handcuffs or anything would be involved unless you want it to. So,
just imagine having Jim Butcher visit. Okay, what's up, Justin?
Hey, someday, right? Like, I'll try and keep my fanboy well in check for that sort of thing. But, you know, if we hit it off, then it happens. He's got friends too, right? Not just his little asylum of people he tortures.
The bait asylum. Mm-hmm. Right. Give him a sticker. But
oh yeah.
Shall we move on to another character to discuss? Or because we're nearing an hour, shall we close?
I think if we take another character, we'll probably go way over.
Yeah, okay. It depends. It depends on you. I'm not in a hurry, but if we talk about him in order, like Sonya's next, and I think he should get at least 20 minutes, right?
So maybe Aurora Lily?
They're dead. The end. So whatever you want to talk about.
There's some ladies.
Yes. It's I don't know. It was fascinating for me to realize how much Lily becoming Aurora, or just like the shared curse of being the Summer Lady, is too compassionate instead of too violent. And all that Aurora wanted to do was to stop the pain. And whether like she was in pain from Nemesis, which is possible, or she just wanted the whole struggle of life to stop. Because life is struggle.
A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
Like, yeah.
It's one of the classic like sympathetic bad guys, right? Like they think they're doing the right thing. I'm going to kill all the little babies because then they won't suffer no more. And it's like, yeah, except you're kind of missing the point for that one. So
yeah, I'm gonna conquer the entire world so there will be no more war over territory or resources because I'm gonna dictate everything.
Right Yeah, like that works out well.
I mean, that's just like the footnote of like any bad guy. They don't think they're the bad guy.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm the bad guy. I'm doing something good.
Like the first one that we really truly see, she did not understand that she was a bad guy.
Right.
And
I guess Corpse Taker might have an idea that she's the bad guy. She just doesn't care. She's like, I'm in it for me. Fuck you guys.
Mm-hmm.
But I know I'm a bad guy. Kind of like that. But there are definitely others who are like, I don't think McCone knows he's a criminal, but I don't think he sees himself as a bad guy because of his code of honor ethics thing.
I thought he's straight up, like, he owns it, you know, like, he does bad things, but it's certainly better than the alternative, and he knows that for a fact, too, because of his history.
Yeah, so. And it's the, I'm better than them, even though I'm a bad guy kind of phrase from Marcone.
Right.
But
it's like, sure, I'm a bad guy. Do you want the alternative? Because I bet you don't.
Yeah, but with Aurora Lily, like, they don't recognize that what they're doing is wrong. All they can see is what they're blinded by of, like, how much bad things are happening, and they think they have the power to stop it in both different times.
Right. The tragedy there, in a way, is that they both were manipulated by Nemesis, right? Like, Aurora was almost certainly infected herself, whereas Lily was simply manipulated by Maeve, who was infected, which was kind of interesting, and just convinced, like, Lily was just naive to a fault, right? Like somehow Maeve got into her and was able to convince her that Maeve was the answer to everything, which is nuts when you think about it from the outside perspective, right? It's like, we should otherwise be arch nemeses, not because I hate you, but because that is the way of the universe, right? Because we are fire and water. We are, you know, winter and summer. And yet somehow Maeve sweet talked her. Like, to me, that's just how naive Lily was, right? Where she got manipulated into that, because I don't think we had any evidence that she was infected with Nemesis directly.
So no,
it does bring up an interesting thought that Maeve got infected and we see other characters get infected, but for some reason Lily's not infected. Does something have to happen to you to get infected?
It could be that it's just costly. Like, you know, if it takes a cost to infect someone.
The amount of people.
So they did it to Maeve, and Maeve has the ability to lie all of a sudden, and she just like starts fucking up everyone else, which, like, could have been happening.
It is pretty happened for years. Thousands of years of evidence that she cannot lie, like that she can't lie, and then suddenly she can lie, and she's like bullshit her way through everything because they'll believe whatever I say.
Well, and so, yeah, there's part of that, but part of the fact, yeah, like they can't lie, but they all but lie anyway. And so sometimes what they say they're taking is a lie.
When she's just been asked to straight up say something that is categorically true, like, and she's like, she gives something that can't be misinterpreted.
Right. And so, and it's just like, all it's a they've had lie. To do was say that something is wrong and you have to believe me because I can't tell you a lie. And so Lily and Fix just like, oh, she has to be telling the truth. So even though she was helping, she still like was able to be her weird, crazy, violent, bitchy ass. And like Lily was expecting it, but also expecting her to be an ally in her own way.
Right.
Because Maeve can't tell a lie. And that, but
that is a really good point.
And so did Maeve get infected by Aurora? We don't think that Maeve was infected in Summer Night, right?
I thought she got infected by Leah. So that the...
That when the thing left Leah, it got into...
into Maeve. The water that Harry said. Yeah.
Right, the Athame, right? So... But so, yeah, so...
Aurora...
And that was a thing, too, because I was thinking, like, most of the... characters we've seen that are definitively infected are Winter, but I think because the Athame, because otherwise, like, it would be the gate, but Rashid is pretty sure he's nothing's come through the gate, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's like his job. So yeah, it seems like Leah got to at least Maeve, and maybe Maeve from there got to others, because we know Cat Sith was infected. How Aurora got infected, we have no idea, but I don't remember who brought that up, because it's not like Harry knows in Summer Night. Like Titania maybe mentioned it in...
No, it was when he went to speak to Lily at the Botanical Gardens, and Maeve shows up, and Lily was like, don't you notice that there's this thing happening? It's turning people against their nature. And like, oh, yeah, Lily, or Aurora, that was the thing. Like, gotcha. It was, she was trying to break the thing that like held her in existence. And then she started... He went to Titania. Titania gave him a name, and then he started going off and off and off. And that's Cold Story, Cold Days.
Gotcha. Okay. Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, just kind of interesting because we don't know how she got it. And, mm-hmm. you know, like I say, Winter doesn't, you know, it's not too surprising just because, again, they're on the wall. They're literally fighting the outsiders. So Summer, in theory, would be further from that, you know, like, if they're on the opposite side of Winter's territory from the gates. I know it's all, you know, semantics when you're talking about like not a physical barrier of the wall. That's just how Harry sees it. That's the weird thing to think about the structure of the universe in the Dresden Files, right? Because like you could think about it as a bubble, but then it's hard to build a wall that way. And then he sees it as a physical manifestation of a wall and whatever. So they got to her somehow, and Cal and Kumori got the blade somehow.
Here's a conspiracy theory that I know has been thrown around, is that what if Aurora got infected via Elaine? Because Elaine was with Justin DeMorn, who was with an outsider.
That
okay. So,
but
so then, Elaine is infected.
Yeah, it does propose that Elaine is the enemy. And is she or is she not? But it's like, it's possible if she is.
Yeah.
All the way. What if Elaine is Kumori? Woo!
Right. And then a potential counterpoint.
Maybe might be going a little far here.
Can mm-hmm. the Starborn get infected? Like, is that part of their power? You know, because if it is, then why hasn't Harry been infected, or, you know, stuff like that? So.
Which brings me to what is the criteria for getting infected?
Right. Yeah. Right. Or so, the criteria of being a Starborn.
Right. Well, I mean, it's kind of implied in the name, just saying. So.
Born of a star?
Well, during a certain time, right? So the question, the real question is, like, was Mars rising or falling at that time? And what was the phase of the moon? And, but yeah, like, the stars were right, you know, for those Cthulhu fans. So when the stars are right, then, you know, the sleeper will arise, or is he the dreamer? One of those two. And then. Right, I'm just trying to remember what it was. The sleeper cult, wasn't that what Ramirez called him? So, in we all read day or day
cold
one
case.
Or cold case. Yeah. Sorry, different first day on the job. So story, but yeah. So yeah, I guess it. I mean, it would put more eggs on the side of balance for Elaine being Kumori kind of helps establish those two things, because I thought it got confirmed in some Q&A or something that it was Cal and Kumori that gave the presents, or like were helping Bianca at, you know, her party, which is also evidence that she might have been infected with Nemesis as well, and possibly just the Red Court in general, or they're at least being manipulated by the Circle. Like, it's all these pieces together, which is why I think he, you know, Butcher's come out and said, like, there are some clever people out there who have put all the pieces together and whatnot. So, like, I think I've got a decent size of the puzzle, but I think we're still missing enough critical pieces that without making the right kinds of leaps, you don't have the full story. But it does, more and more evidence kind of pushes towards that. And then you still got to ask yourself, why is Cal familiar? Like, who is he? Mm-hmm. You know?
And why is Cal familiar but not Kumori?
Right. Because he knows Elaine. Like, he knows both biblically and just in the fact that they spent a lot of time together, right? So, you know, she's all but an extension of him. So that's it. Elaine is Cal. We've been doing it wrong the whole time. They're using magic to transfigure themselves into each other. And Justin is Kumori. So, no. But, I mean, he's dead. So that's why I like the...
D-E-D, dead.
Right. That's why I like the first senior council guy. Why can't I remember his name? From Archangel?
Peter.
Yeah.
No, Simon.
Simon Petrovich. Right. So that's why I like the theory that he is Cowl, because he died off screen, and everybody knows that when you die off screen, it doesn't happen. Is why no one believes that Justin's actually dead. And, you know, so, like, that's the one thing that Butcher's adamant about, like, mostly, but I... Like, we haven't seen people come back from the dead before in the Dresden Files. So, you know, sure, he's dead, but I think there's still shenanigans at play, potentially.
Corpse Taker was dead, still came back, fucked things up.
Right. She was dead, right?
Uh-huh.
So, anyway, long story short, I mean, that seems to be the most evidence-based, in my opinion, is that it's like, you know, Cal and Kumori are like Simon and Elaine because reasons, but like you said, for whatever reason, a guy he's never met, you know, if it is Simon, a guy he's never met seems really familiar, other than maybe they're both White Council, right? And then a gal that he literally fucking slept with, like fucking fucked, you know, and they've got like spells to talk to each other. That's how synced they are, is that they can read each other's minds. She doesn't freaking seem related at all. And he never senses the black magic when Elaine's around. And,
I know this is not the case. So I'm not just saying this because I just had a random thought about it. If Cowl is Ebenezer, I'm going to flip my shit.
Oh, Jesus. That would be pretty hardcore, though.
But man, would I be mad.
Right. What? Yeah, I feel like Ebenezer, like, dude, that would be like that. It would have to just be it's that way because I wrote it that way, you know, because like Ebenezer's personality. I mean, he's also practically above
dimensions of character. Like, OK, Cowl is tall, but not hairy tall. And then Ebenezer is like kind of tall ish, but stocky.
Right.
And like different people, unless more transfiguration.
I mean, he's very good friends with a certain Indian, right? Who can kind of do whatever he wants with his buddy.
Right. That. There you go. So Cal and Kumori are Injun Joe and Ebenezer. There we go.
It was Injun Joe and Ebenezer all along.
Right.
And they would have gotten away with it. It was one for that meddling kid and his dog.
His literally talking dog. Yeah. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also the talking skull that's straight out of the Scooby-Doo opening.
Right.
And I hope he gets... I know he probably won't. Like, Bob is with the Butters now, I guess, for good. And
he's we need to have Bob back.
We're going to have the girl instead as a knowledge repertoire thing.
But we need Bob's snark.
Yeah, I was like, I hope Bob comes back, but I don't really see it happening.
I hope Bob comes back and starts teaching Bonnie all the wrong things and gets Harry frustrated, and then, yeah, that part.
No, I mean, I want all of these things too, but I like the idea of a Jewish Knight of the Cross using a spirit of intellect, you know, as one of his main things. Like, I could just see Michael every time he talks to Butters just being like, oh my God, why are you still with the skull and everything? Like, what's wrong with you?
Wow, and you're Butters Jewish. Runs around with the lightsaber.
Right.
But like Butters with the lightsaber being physically fit trained by Michael and Charity, who right. also has the gadgets and the magical powers of Bob that he can like draw on Bob's magic. That's a guy to be reckoned with.
Oh yeah, for sure.
5'3", 40-something Jewish guy with glasses, 100 pounds.
Lightsaber and magical spirit of intellect and gadgets. I mean, he's like...
He's the magical paladin.
Batman, Jedi.
Right. Which is why I was hoping to see more of those shenanigans in day one. But it seems... I mean, he maybe as part of being a knight, like Michael talks him into giving up the spirit, or giving up Bob, and that's how Bob winds up back with Harry. So...
Maybe.
And then I just had other weird thoughts, so I'm not going to say those out loud.
Weird or just like really weird, weird?
Like really weird because Bob weird. So I'll tell you afterwards before I get in trouble and, you know, whatever else.
You don't want video evidence. Right. But I guess we should probably bring this episode to a close because we're no longer talking about the characters that we originally started to try to talk about. So let me plug all of our crap because... I think, I don't know, are we getting more? I think we have, like, the new one, the long haul.
Right.
And then, like, the normal ones that are keep going, like, come on, help me out.
Great, Scott. And, you know, yours. Maybe you plug your show.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I got High Fantasy, which I do every alternating other week. And that's, yeah, that's fun because the Colin and Jacob and we bitch about everything that we love and hate in books because we just like to bitch.
Right. And then
to get Great Scott. Liking to bitch? What?
We have opinions. We put them out on the internet for people to listen to if you like it.
Jacob having opinions? What?
None of us have any opinions. Like between the three of us, I don't think we have an opinion.
No one here has opinions on broken jars. We're just like automatons.
No, we break the jars and we use a jagged glass to cut each other because we have opinions.
Wow. That was hardcore.
When someone says someone other than Joe should end up with Harry, I'm like, what? What'd you say? I caught a bitch.
Oh, right.
And Great Scott's still going. Dangerous to Go Alone is still going, doing their nerdy thing. And we still have lots of stickers if you want to join our Patreon, because we also have the Discord that you can join in and talk with us all day about stuff and other rewards to come. I think that's everything. So say bye.
Bye.
Say bye.